tonight, here's what he's going to talk about. The topic is your magnificence, discovering it, experiencing it, playing in it, claiming it, and enjoying it. Should be interesting. Here's Bill.
Well, I thank you, Donna. I told you when we first started that the reason I was a little late in jumping in here is I was so excited about it. Actually, it took me that long just to read the title, so it took me 10 minutes. So, Donna, thank you for that. And I know you are as excited as I am about this, I mean, to get into all those words, like all around our magnificence. But first, I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to your precious soul in being here with us tonight, and we always know that just whoever is just right for any moment is right here with us. And let's just assume that every one of us who's here is here deeply bonded, bonded at the heart, bonded at the hip. That was good. And for Eleanor's sake, I'll say bonded at the foot, and just bonded at the deepest, deepest place of soul. So thank you for being together. Second, I just want to wish you all a great 4th of July weekend. I was thinking today, it's, 4th of July is the birthday of the country, but that really means it's the birthday of every one of us. So I think we can all go out and buy ourselves a big birthday present and just have a wonderful, wonderful time. Since we were last together a month ago, I had the privilege of hanging out in Asheville, North Carolina, doing a seminar. Actually, I was playing. Everybody else seemed to be doing the seminar, but I was having a good time playing with everyone and just spending time with, just most magnificent people. What a beautiful, beautiful community that is. And Eleanor Hall had the great privilege of hanging out with us there that weekend as well. And then after that, we had the third and last weekend of our Enlightened Leadership Group. And I want to tell you that the group of people are just amazing, and we just had a wonderful time. So it was just one of the world's greatest experiences, and it will be repeated next year when, with CSL, I offer Enlightened Leadership one more time. So let's get to this evening's topic, and I want to repeat it because it's just too juicy. Your magnificence, and that's the deal, your magnificence. Can you feel that? Discovering it, experiencing it, playing in it, claiming it, and enjoying it. And obviously my intention is to have each and every one of us just revel in this kind of often hidden truth of life, the truth that you and I are magnificent beings, that the magnificence of life, of infinity, of divinity lives in us, expresses through us, is alive in every pore, in every cell of our being, and just screams for the excitement of living fully in this three-dimensional space. That's it. And I have a sneaking suspicion, just watching myself jot these cute little notes down over the afternoon, though I never quite know where I'm going, but I have the sneaking suspicion that I'm also going to use this topic of our magnificence as to do a little end run around the whole human experience. So never turn your back on me. Watch out. So we all know the real, simple, pure truth of this statement that you and I are indeed magnificent. And we equally know how often we forget it, or we ignore it, or we sidestep it, or we just get distracted by other perceptions of reality. You know, I every now and then when I watch the news or I read the newspaper, certain things grip me. One is that probably, at least in what I watch, about 90% of what's reported, we could probably place under the category of this is wrong or what's wrong, something's wrong. And the second thing that grips me is the tone. The tone usually has something that if I feel the tone of the reporting, it kind of stirs a place of fear, or there's a kind of a deep angst that seems to be accompanying whatever the reporting is about. And then the third thing that I get is that there's some underlying assumption to both the tone and the this is wrong theme. And the tone is the assumption is something like, I think, something's wrong with life, or something's wrong in life. And so in the face of this this kind of fear-based tone and this assumption, my sense is it takes a really special person. It takes a person with a lot of personal strength, or a person with a deeply grounded core, maybe a person who knows herself, himself, very strongly, or maybe a person whose personal vision of life is very, very powerful, to watch and listen to this daily style of news reporting, and not just the news, but people we talk to in the store or whatever. And I look at the last five or six people that I just casually know, and I said, "Hey, how you doing?" And one response was, "I've had better days." And then I heard the story, and then another was, "Oh, not so great. I've got this gripping cold," and on and on. And if we listen to enough of it, by golly, we could forget that, you know where I'm going, we are all magnificent. So I want you to know I'm not bashing the news. I'm not bashing these precious people who told me that they've had better days, because I think, personally, what's really great, I mean really great about the human scene, are our differences. We have different viewpoints, different perceptions, interpretations, beliefs, theories, assumptions, values, you name it. Everything's different, personalities, orientations. And I personally have come to love these differences. I think that's what makes for such a rich planet, that the differences grip us. They challenge each of us to always be expanding our thinking, to always be in the process of refining our interpretations, our values, always calling us to fine-tune the ways that we relate to this whole three-dimensional, funny place that we live in. Or to say it another way, the really cool thing about Earth, and I'm going to give this a little twist now, is, and this may seem a little bold to say, is that I feel like there's no ultimate truth on this earth that our regular minds can reach or discover or grasp. And here's what I mean. We humans, have no claim to the pure picture of life, the bigger truth, if we simply try to access it with the regular dualistic perceptions of our regular human mind. Somehow, we need a much bigger mind. And here's where I think I'm taking that end run I talked about up front. We need a much bigger mind. We need a multidimensionally oriented mind. We need a mind that knows unity just as well as it knows duality. We need a mind that can reach into life's mystery and find some clear knowing right in the middle of unknowing. We need a mind that can cruise the far reaches of what we might call imagination and fiction, and somehow in that find reality. We need a mind that's comfortable with knowing nothing. I mean, really not knowing anything. And in that ignorance, finding a fuller truth. We need a mind that can literally penetrate the scary realms of our human dramas and find in there nothing short of God, himself, herself, itself. We need a mind that can fathom the depths of what we've come to call human misery, human pain, and somehow experience the ecstasy that even the scientific research says is contained in those painful screams. And finally, I think we need a mind that's open enough, that's expansive enough, that's brilliant enough, and by brilliant I mean like filled with light, brilliant enough that it can see every minute detail, every minuscule particle of anything as a small expression of some much, much bigger scene, bigger reality, bigger vision, bigger truth. And so often we get to those bigger truths not really by studying about them and not by reasoning our way to them. No, I think, at least for me, this has been it. We get to them by experiencing them, experiencing what's on our plate in any given moment, by somehow allowing ourselves to say yes to whatever life happens to deliver on our personal doorstep, by involving ourselves experientially in the scary details of life rather than trying to like sidestep them or run around them. You know, the terrifying stuff that often we look out and we see it destroying other people or scaring them off or keeping them stuck. So it takes a mind, it takes a you, it takes a me, It takes a self, it takes a person to be big enough, to be grand enough, to be expansive enough, to be willing enough to show up, to face and experience life, if you will, in the raw. And that's the human scene. The human scene is a raw, core, primal, juicy, magnificent, energy-rich place where all of infinity acts itself out, lives itself out, and that's what we're here for. So, in other words, we need to be willing to be here fully. And that takes a special kind of person, and that's why we're having this conversation, because you happen to be that kind of person. I happen to be that kind of person. And somehow the glue of life, the magnetic energy of mutual love and support have drawn us together so that we can support each other in how to be in our magnificence, find it, discover it, play in it, celebrate it, live it, fully enjoy it while in the midst of, and even finding that magnificence in the midst of, this precious life that we've come here to access. So let me say it another way. To experience and play in our magnificence, we need not only to reach way up there outside of ourselves into the magnificence, the sacredness of the heavens, where indeed we find what I want to call the undisputed truth of not just our magnificence, but the magnificence of all life, but equally important for us to reach down into the supposed scary stuff of life, into the convincing story of how awful we are, into the collective human feelings of our, oh, get ready for an awful word. I wrote this down this afternoon. I'm ashamed of myself. Of our despicability. I don't even know if it's a word. Anyway, how despicable we are. Yeah, and you know me. I've talked to so many people and told them how despicable I think they are. It's a terrible, pathetic thing. And this is why I'm so delighted that I have you all on mute so I can't hear your comments in that regard. So why is this important? Well, first of all, I think in the bigger dimension of life, the bigger realm of life, that is in the areas where we experience the unity of it all more than the duality, it's not important at all. It's not important at all to throw ourselves, hurl ourselves into all this scary stuff. But here on Earth, where we're surrounded daily with those news programs I talked about, where we talk to our neighbors who are frequently complaining to us about this or that, we somehow, you and I, we need to find that truth, because it's a truth we're called to. We need to find our truth. For example, the truth that we are totally and completely magnificent. That truth, by not avoiding everything else that might seem to be indicators that we're not or that life isn't, but by walking through all the varieties of opinion, if you will, by experiencing, to use a great movie title, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Yeah, that's right. And by wading through the light of it all and the dark of it all. So, most of us, we can, but let's say we can't just look up to the heavens, see our perfection there and own it as our truth, free and clear for the rest of our lives. We can do that, and we can do it successfully for at least a little while. But life almost always approaches us, comes to us, and asks us the question, are you sure? Is this really your truth? And then life gives us exactly those situations, brings to us those people that and who allow us the privilege of testing out our beliefs in the face of what might look like vastly conflicting evidence. For example, if I'm a great believer that everything is perfect, well, sure enough, life will present me inevitably with some seemingly convincing evidence that such and such a situation that just slapped me in the face, or such and such a person who just really did something and my feelings got hurt, is nowhere close to perfection. And often that situation will be one that grips me emotionally to the core and asks me to really show up to the question, is everything perfect? Does the deepest core realm of my being believe that it's perfect? And that invitation, I believe, is there so as to invite that deep facet of me that may be a little shaky about it, maybe isn't so sure about it, to step up and and just see with fresh evidence, with fresh eyes, with fresh decision-making, with fresh presence, what is the truth. And we do that by experiencing it. So I think the underlying question about our magnificence is not, am I or am I not magnificent? I think, indeed, every one of us, you, me, I mean, who wouldn't jump eagerly on the bandwagon of the glory and the wonder of all of us and of life itself and the utter radiance of who we are and together as well as individually just proclaim the absolute truth of, yes, we are wonderful. We're divine. You're divine, darling, simply divine. So the underlying question isn't that, I think. It's maybe this. Am I willing to face and walk through the opposite of what I believe? It's an interesting question, isn't it? Am I willing to examine my beliefs by hanging out on the other side of the fence of the truth of them that I suppose is true? Am I willing to suspend my belief even, and to even be open to its opposite? And I think a lot of us would agree much of the time, you know, we're not so willing to do that. So imagine yourself. Here's an example. Being approached by someone who holds the absolute opposite political orientation as you do. Okay, you got that picture? And that person is trying very hard to convince you that his or her opinion is not only right, but it's much better than yours. So how willing are you, just as you feel into that, how willing are you to enter into that person's world, that person's mindset, or to try on that person's orientation compared to, for example, protecting yourself against it, disagreeing with it, judging it? I had the memory today as I was hanging out with these concepts, the memory of back in the good old Vietnam War days. And in those days, I had a very, very strong set of internal feelings about that war, which back in those days I interpreted as, I think I would have even used the word immoral. So I had some actually quite deep and almost internally violent feelings about the war. And I remember this one fellow approaching me and trying to absolutely convince me. And he did me the favor of not stopping. He just would not take no for an answer. And even when I screamed at him and yelled at him, he did me the added favor of not taking no for an answer, but trying to see, get me to see the utter rightness about that war. And I probably should be totally ashamed to say this, but I fought him all the way. I had absolutely no openness to it, not only because I was convinced I was right, but somehow I think because I was holding on to some self-concept in and through that vehement set of feelings I had, or I was holding on to something anyway. And later, as I looked back on my utter resistance to that person's attempts, I asked myself the question, well, wait a minute, what was I protecting myself from or trying to? What was I so afraid of? Like you know, what if he was right? Or what harm would have happened to me if I'd allowed my mind, my feelings to be open to another viewpoint? Really, down deep, what was I fighting for my life for? What was I fighting against? And in the bigger picture, does it even matter, and I'm taking this to the next level here, does it even matter what we believe in our minds? After all, if it's true that we can't attain the ultimate truth of life through our mental beliefs, then why do we put such stock in those beliefs? Why are we so willing to fight to the death in defense of them or hang on to them so vehemently? Well, you know, I don't have the foggiest clue what the answer to any of these questions is, but I do know something. See, you knew I would save myself here. Nice save, Bill. That was good. I do know something. I know that you and I have a unique privilege here on this precious earth. And it's the privilege of hanging out in every slice of our planet's and our humanity's ideological pie. It's the privilege of living as fully as we want to in every piece of our belief-oriented puzzle. We have the privilege of believing anything we want in whatever way we want for as long as we want until we feel like replacing it with another belief. or even have the privilege of believing several contrary things at the same time. And then we have the privilege of creating our lives through those viewpoints in thousands upon thousands of ways. That's why it's such a magnificent planet. We're not here, I think, to like just find one truth and say, all right, that's it, everything else is wrong, and I'm hanging out here. Even though we are put together in a way that the deepest pure truth that we embody and that we're called to does call us. So I want to share some things. As I look at my personal life, which I had a chance to do this afternoon, you can tell it was a rich afternoon for me. I've noticed that my life path has been about living in many seemingly opposing slices of the pie of life. And so I jotted down five or six examples I'd like to just share with you. One is about belief in God. Now, I would be willing to bet, I could be wrong, that everyone I'm talking to here is a believer in God. We all have our doubts. We all have our questions. We all have our you know, sub-definitions and function and assumptions. But many, many people believe in God. I have believed in God the bulk of my life. Yet I had the privilege of going through several years when I didn't believe in God at all. I first started describing it in fairly agnostic terms, like, I'm not sure, who knows. And then I used my little more scientific mind to absolutely prove to myself that, you know, there really is no such thing as God. It's this and it's that in the human psyche, but there's probably no God. And the reason I'm making the point is not to raise the question, is there a God or isn't there a God, but the privilege I had of hanging out in both ends of and probably a few places in the middle of the spectrum so that I can deeply, deeply understand and grasp anybody who's anywhere, that I can really get someone who is totally not oriented toward anything that has to do with the divine or the spiritual. Let me give you another example, and this is one, frankly, I hadn't even thought about in, give it at least two or three decades. It goes back to when I was in college, which was not two or three decades. It was just 3 years ago. I'm really very young. Anyway, it was when I was in college, and I spent a couple years, and before I tell you what it is, I want to share the contrast. We're talking about our magnificence. We're talking about how, wow, God lives in us, and the divinity that's here, the perfection that's here, the radiance that's here, is just the part of the joy of life. Well, in college, I spent a couple of years absolutely in my personal life specializing in the exact opposite of that. And some of you know I was in a Catholic seminary, Catholic college at the time. And I was exploring sort of medieval, Middle Ages Catholic spirituality. And if you know much about it, it was really very much kind of a downer on the human scene. It was really, it was talking about how to be human is kind of pathetic and terrible, and you know, the original sin thing, and how we could really do God a great favor. We could celebrate God, magnify God, rejoice in God, just give all the glory to God if we simply continually put ourselves down. So there was I even forget the name of the book right now, but there was one of those books that was in that vein that used words, that's good, I like it, that used words like worms, like I am a worm, God is all great, and I am nothing but the you know, pathetic dung of the earth. It literally used those kind of words. So I played in that for a while. And I took it seriously, at least as serious as, you know, you can imagine that I could take it. But for some reason, deep in me, it was very important that I walk through that. And, of course, the purpose of it from a medieval Christian spirituality was humility. And actually, after a couple years, I felt like I got so humble I couldn't stand myself anymore. And so I shifted from that. So let me give you just another example, a third example. In terms of spirituality, I spent a lot of years trying on different religions or religious theories, philosophical theories, spiritualities. I walked through Buddhism and the Taoist, the animist, the indigenous peoples, the Christian, the Jewish, and others. And I would hang out in them, not just read about them, do that a little bit, but mainly take on some of the practices and the theology and the pathos and the energy of it all. And take on their worldviews, create my life through their approaches, only to come to know it intimately and then move on to whatever was next. For me, that was important, and not that it's important for everybody, but it was important so that I could get the richness of life from all sorts of perspectives. And then I want to share one more thing. No, actually, maybe a couple more. But one is a practice that I literally taught to myself many years ago, and I don't even know where it came from. It just came up. And even to this day, it's a practice that subconsciously goes on, even though I don't purposely even think about it. I take whatever anyone says, and I embrace it as possibly being true, or as certainly being true, at least from the perspective of that person. Or to say it another way, it's at least as true or as valid as any other perception or idea that's on the planet. So for some reason, I just started doing that. And whether it's a political opinion or a philosophical idea or a psychological tenet or a spiritual value or literally anything, what I do is I just take it for what it is. Then I let myself value it. I kind of taste it, take it into myself, rather than just looking at it, if you will, clinically or objectively from the outside. I try it on. I bring it into the depths of my innermost feelings. I sort of ask my psyche how it feels as it kind of swirls around my insides. And then I open myself to sort of relishing its particular slant on life, even if a part of me is saying, ooh. In whatever way I can, I treasure it. I treasure whatever its contribution to life may be, and I totally value it as some beautiful expression of the divine, no matter how, for example, ugly my previous belief or value might have held it to be. Well, you know, this took a while to fairly well perfect, and of course, having done that, it's now just a kind of a natural subconscious part of my being. But that simple practice had enormous value to me, and I think one of the effects was that I can stay acutely aware that every perceived truth, every spoken truth, has value and may have equal value to every other. And second, it helps me stay strongly unattached to my natural orientations. I mean, we all have natural truth, natural orientation, something in us that says, this is who I am, this is what I'm about. But oftentimes we're so attached to those that we feel ourselves having to protect ourselves against others. And so it's helped me stay unattached. And then, obviously, it allows me to understand other people much more profoundly with not just deeper understanding, but with gratitude to them for what they've put into coming up with that opinion or that belief, et cetera. And then with that approach, I can dance among every viewpoint and perspective with deep, equal appreciation for every one of them. And I think one other value to me is I don't have to be plagued by all sorts of personal judgments and, if you will, good guy, bad guy scenarios in my trusty, cute little brain. So I have like one more example, and then I want to have us move on a little bit. Security. Let me just say a little something about security. We all, of course, deep in our core, our root chakra, but especially our sacral center, that gut level facet of us, we're oriented to feeling safe and secure. It's the most natural human thing we've got going. And you know, so we have paradigms, recommendations for feeling safe and secure. You know, don't pick up hitchhikers, don't walk in certain neighborhoods at night, don't ride a motorcycle, don't do this or don't do that because it might be dangerous. It might make precarious that sense of safety or security that we've got. So over the years, I found myself, again, just not by design, not by planning it, but just by listening to my inner self, even listening to my soul's inspiration, when something inside would say, oh, do that anyway. Even if my mind would say, ooh, but you know, that could be dangerous. So what I did is I just listened internally, and when something deeply spiritual, deeply grounded, deep from some deep truth in my being seemed to be saying, do that, I did it. And only to find that in every instance without fail, something significant came from it. So in that way, I stretched. And I think all these examples are about stretching. You know, I think I've got one more example. This just came to me. Opposite approaches. Through most of my life, this is true confessions here. This is great. This is better than daytime soap operas. So get ready. I've done two things at the same time. One is whatever I got invited to spiritually, I completely surrendered to it. Whatever was spiritually asked of me, whatever my internal guidance was, whether it meant moving to a new location, changing my personal orientation to life, becoming a leader in arenas that maybe wouldn't have been my first choice, whatever it was, I absolutely, literally surrendered. I did it. I let go. I 100% was right there. And conversely, deep in my core, I rebelled. I resisted. I growled. I grumbled. I kicked. I screamed. I chose not to be a very happy camper about the whole scene that externally and behaviorally I was giving myself 100% to. So I had two dynamics going on. One, yes, profound, powerful yes. And those I did, again, externally, behaviorally, I did them with great dedication, great commitment, not holding back in any way. It was a total yes. And the second part was more of an inner behind-the-scenes rumbling. It was all internal. It came from somewhere deep in my gut, from some underbelly of my personal unconscious, from somewhere that maybe even for a while genuinely hated God, hated being human, hated being in service, hated, maybe just plain hated, I don't know. Anyway, I remember at some point when I noticed the last of that resistance, that grumbling, that oh poor me stuff just disappeared. It just disappeared from my psyche after decades of mumbling and grumbling. I remember the wonderful feeling of freedom, just freedom that, ooh, without that grumbling, the freedom that came that left me feeling like, ooh, gee, now I'm fully in the flow of life, whereas before I was externally in the flow of life and in so many ways, but there was the echo of pain from inside. So to move on, I wanted to share some of these examples with you to emphasize one simple truth. And remember I said up front, I think I may use this as an end run, and sure enough, that's what I did. The truth is we usually get to the truth of what we're called to the truth that lies and lives powerfully in our hearts. Like, for example, the truth of our magnificence, when we allow ourselves to be open not just to that truth, but to any version of that truth, even its seeming opposite. In other words, we can let go with total trust into being open to anything, any perspective, any orientation, any event, any circumstance, any person, any opinion, without any fear of losing who we are, losing our truth, simply because that's what planet Earth is all about. It's all about walking through every path in the forest. So let's apply that to the truth that you and I are magnificent. I just listened to, I just felt the reverberation of those words. You and I are magnificent. So if I had a threefold approach to discovering, embracing, accepting, living in, celebrating, enjoying our inherent magnificence, you know, like a three-step process to make it totally real in the depths of who we are, I would say it this way. I'd recommend these steps to you if you feel like taking them. Step one, be willing to be wrong. Be willing to be wrong. It's okay to be wrong. Let go of your preconceived belief about whatever it is. Become as neutral a thinker, as emptied out a believer as you can about whatever it is you're believing in. So that's step one. Be willing to be wrong. Let it go. Whatever it is you're convinced about, whatever it is you know deeply, yes, be with it, but let it go at the same time. Step number two, look at the possibility, in this instance, of your magnificence or whatever, but look at the possibility of your magnificence from that place of neutrality, of unattachedness. And when you don't find anything in you that has to believe it, then bring it back. Try it on again. Bring it more deeply into yourself and take it into every aspect of who you are. For example, present it maybe to your mind, which will probably feel relieved that you finally have enough sense to come back to your real truth after you've walked through all these other paths. And then ask your mind, what's it feel like now? Then present it to your emotions. Ask your emotional self how this perception of yourself as magnificent feels deep, deep down. And then, like, present it to your gut-level feelings, and feel into how your gut's receiving it. Ask your instincts, your instinctive gut, whether it feels real or true or right that you are that magnificent. Ask it if your gut can accept your magnificence, its own magnificence, and live it every day. And when you take these steps, you're presenting your magnificence to what we all know modern literature has defined as, one, your cognitive intelligence. That's what I called your mind. It's in your head. Your emotional intelligence in your heart is what I called your emotions. And your primal intelligence in your gut, what I called your gut. And so then our knowing is total. It's complete. And when all three of these slices of your, if you will, your voting consciousness weigh in on the question of, are you magnificent? Then you've got a pretty good idea of how thoroughly you deeply believe it, how fully you can live that magnificence every moment of your life. So those are the first two steps. One, be willing to be wrong. Let go of whatever you believe in. Two, look at the possibility of whatever it is from the place of neutrality, and then bring it deeply into yourself and just kind of stay with it as it moves through your being and ask, what's it feel like? And step three, once you've reclaimed your magnificence, oh, treasure it. Just treasure it. Visit it every day if you want. Hang out with it in your gut. Think about it in your mind. Love it in your heart. Observe it in your inner witnessing. Wonder about it in your vast spirit. Feel it in your emotion. Sense it in your intuition. Picture it in your right brain. Enjoy the mystery of it in your mystical self. Participate with it intimately, personally, deeply, as it travels through every element of your being, as it moves through your veins and through your bones. And when we pay close attention to our magnificence, for example, in the ways I'm talking about, and of course to anything else that we feel like showing up to, amazing things happen. We can feel our magnificence in our gut, maybe like never before. We can actually hear it echoing in our heart. We can hear it in our heartbeat. We can taste it in our nervous system. We can smell it in our veins. We can enjoy it in every level of our consciousness. We can celebrate it in our spirit. Wow. Whew, thank you. I need a drink. Oh, see how excited you make me. Thank you for doing this with me, by the way. This is so much fun. So let's take a look. A little summary look at what we've done during this conversation so far. First, we started out with, of course, our magnificence, that pure spiritual truth that lives solidly, solidly in our superconscious mind, in our deepest knowing. We know it's true. Then, we visited the fact that our world entertains many, many viewpoints, even those that find no evidence that we are inherently magnificent. So third, we started looking at how we can navigate these varied approaches, even trying on each one with a personal openness to how it might speak to us. And then last, we came back to our magnificent. We talked about about bringing it into our being anew and how to enjoy its aliveness within ourselves. So I'd like to take one more go around with this, and I'd like to do it from the point of view of you and me as leaders, not just as embodiments of magnificence, not just as experiencers of magnificence, but as leaders of magnificence. Let's look at it from the place of an innermost calling. Let's ask ourselves if we feel called to be, this is a different word for leader, ambassadors of our human magnificence, voices, if you will, of our inherent human wonder, luminaries of our human brightness, expressors of our innate beauty as human beings, blessers of everyone we meet, blessers of the magnificence of others around us. And let's make what I think is an important distinction. It's a distinction between, on the one hand, owning and cherishing our magnificence within ourselves, in a way that we deeply know. And then B, this is the leadership thing, having a personal calling or feeling deeply moved, propelled, some spiritual impetus, some deep sense that you're being called to manifest that truth, that magnificence to the world around you, as opposed to just kind of holding it in yourself and having a marvelous personal experience. Maybe feeling called to officially witness other people's magnificence, to stand in, sit in, hold the space for their magnificence just by being you. Or called to radiate your own magnificence to others as a way of mirroring to them their true self, right back to them. Well, I don't know about you, but for me, I've had to have both of those. I've never been allowed to preach one thing and practice another, and I think every one of us here bonded in this moment would say the same. And I've never been able to talk to you, for example, about your magnificence and feel anything short of that within myself. So I had to become the truth in the fullest way possible at first, and then life allowed me to bring it to others. Well, I believe, and this is a message from me to you, you have incorporated the awareness of your magnificence deeply enough into your consciousness at this very moment of your lives. Even if you don't remember it every hour of every day, or even if you don't consider yourself a real master of your magnificence or of the magnificence of life, even if your self-concept still has remnants of what's wrong with me connected to it, you have incorporated that awareness so deeply within you that even now you are already that leader of magnificence. You are that ambassador of magnificence to the world around you. So I want to say it another way. I believe deeply that your soul is satisfied enough with your personal efforts to embrace magnificence, to feel it, to live it, to experience it daily, that your soul may be inviting you right now to step out into your world as a conscious leader of others, conscious meaning that you've owned that leadership in yourself, not just being a leader of yourself. So to be a real leader, like an inspirational leader wherein you inspire others to see their own beauty, or a transformational leader wherein you support others in changing their self-concept by owning their specialness even more, or, if you will, a servant leader wherein you love and serve others in such a way that they, bit by bit, realize their wonder because you've served them with yours. Or a visionary leader, wherein your personal vision is shared in a way that moves others to participate more intimately in that vision and make it their own. So to be a real leader in all these ways and to be a leader of our shared human magnificence, to embrace a calling on your part to be a transmitter of that inherent magnificence, to take on a sense of your own purpose that includes radiating the magnificence of everyone you see right back to them so that they can experience it even more, to see yourself as a part of our shared avatar, serving this precious race with the rest of us servant leaders so that together we grow and shine in our shared perfection. And then to know the power of giving our gifts, your gifts, to the whole human race, to the whole three-dimensional spectrum, to all of life, simply by being fully our own magnificence and intentionally allowing it to shine out to others in a way that just lets all of us celebrate it. To be this kind of leader, to be this kind of lover, to be this kind of liver, is a beautiful way to spend your life, and it's a win-win because everybody wins in it. In fact, it just may be the grandest purpose you could ever have and the greatest joy you could ever experience. Why? Simply because in so doing, you're living fully in life's most wondrous of qualities. You're living out one of life's most alluring, captivating experiences. You're so full of this truth that you're shining it out consciously, subconsciously into a world that, let's face it, is really hungry for the real truth about themselves. So here you are, a magnificent, beautiful, radiant, perfect, sensational being. Here you are, a being of endless light, of penetrating love, of fantastic power, of limitless creation. Here you are, a person with wonder in your skin, divinity in your bones, a human embodiment of infinite radiance who just happens to have that extra gift, that extra bonus of knowing this remarkable truth about yourself, that you are radiant and magnificent, and better yet, knowing it about everyone else and about this sacred earth and about this duality-propelled world and about this seemingly boxed-in three-dimensional space and about this universe and multiverse and all creation. So, yes, you are magnificent, and so am I, and so are we all. And so is everything you can touch or feel or sense or envision. We're all replicas of God's amazingness. We're all dynamic, luscious embodiments of divine perfection, and we're all the most magnificent expressions of life that anyone, anywhere, in any dimension could ever imagine. And what a privilege you have, I have, not only to embody all of that, but to splash it all around the worlds in which we live, just by being it fully in our own lives. And by exuding it out into the invisible fabric of life around us, just by the ways we feel moved to do that. What a leader you are, a leader of divine radiance, a leader of human magnificence, a leader of the infinite truth of our human inheritance. Ah, as you simply sit peacefully in the beautiful hearts that surround you, and as you magnify everyone else's magnificence simply by celebrating it in your own way. Whoa, thank you. I want to close my part of our beautiful time together with a quote. It's a quote by none other than Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha himself, who spoke these beautiful words that have come down through the millennia, these beautiful words about our magnificence. It goes like this. When you realize how perfect everything is, you will tilt your head back and laugh at the sky. When you realize how perfect everything is, you will tilt your head back and laugh at the sky, which in a sense is maybe what we're all doing right now. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for the joy of spending this time with you. And just before I open this up to our, oh my goodness, I just looked at my watch. You should be ashamed of yourself letting me go on and on like this. I don't know why you do that. Anyway, just before I turn it over to us to share from us as opposed to from me, I want to make two little announcements. They're very big to me, but in the bigger scheme of things, they're just preciously little. The first is Donna, my beautiful, wondrous life mate Donna is going to have surgery. She's going to have a second hip replacement next month at the end of the month, and that's on July 26th, a Monday. She's going to have that at a hospital in St. George, Utah, the same hospital she's been at with her other one. And so I want to invite us to be with her over these weeks ahead, and especially during that time, because it's not just a surgery, it's just a momentous turning point in her life. And so I invite us all to celebrate that with her together. And the second announcement is that as a result, next month's teleconference, which would have been the very next day, the last Tuesday of the month on the 27th, will be on July 20th. So if you could jot that down somewhere, I would appreciate that. So it'll be on Tuesday, July 20th, the third Tuesday of the month rather than the fourth. And I'll look super forward to doing that with you. So what I want to do now is turn this over to you. You whom I adore as the world's most magnificent people, and invite you to share just whatever you feel like sharing, whether something personal or an inspiring thought or whatever it may be, with us as your way of blessing us and supporting us in just the magnificent leaders that we all are in life. So just before we do that, I'm going to push a couple buttons, and I'll be right back. And we are so ready to go. So if now all of you need to do nothing about this, but if you feel like talking, and I'll mention again that this is not a question-answer time, so please don't ask a question. This is just for you to express to us. If you feel like talking, just unmute your phone. That's usually a *6. And let us know who you are and say what you'd like to say. And then when you're finished, you can just mute your phone again. So is there someone who would love to talk to us? The beautiful pregnancy of silence. I'll just say it again. If anyone would like to express anything, feel free to just unmute your phone and let us know.
Hello, Bill. This is Rick.
Oh, Rick. Hello, hello. From Encinitas, California.
Hi. I just have this one little simple thing, and that's like in thinking about what magnificence is as a manifestation of the truth of the real truth of my reality, deeper than any idea, that anything less than that, that I experience in myself, I'm learning to look at as not as something wrong, but as an opportunity to see that part of how I've lived and organized myself is not around the deepest possible truth of how I could show up in life.
Whoa.
So it becomes an invitation to re-identification away from the belief systems that are just human ideas or the traumas I've had and then created belief systems around that I can look at that and go, oh, that's a place where I'm not quite accepting the strength and reality and power and love that I really am, which are kind of like, you know, vectors of what magnificence is.
Yes.
So I just kind of look at it and go, oh, okay, chance to re-identify. Thank you, you know? So my non-magnificence becomes part of the path to magnificence.
Yes. Oh, Rick, thank you so much. I just heard and felt you speaking to so many of us in a way that's very, very practical. Thank you. That was just beautiful.
You're welcome. Uh-huh. Thank you, Bill.
Oh, yeah. And with someone else to talk with us? Yes.
Hi, this is my name is Andrea Alexi. I used to be Susanna Rose, and I live in the D.C. area.
I'm sorry, I missed your name. Could you say it again?
It is Andrea Alexi, and it used to be Susanna Rose.
Okay, now I'm there. Thank you so much. Yes, go ahead. Well, a wonderful voice.
It is fantastic to be here finally. What I want to share is that Killa is now 17 years old. Everybody is doing fantastically well. I have undergone many transformations in lives and so forth, all in the same body.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what words to put around it, but I have become and am still growing more and more every day and every minute into a planetary leader energetically, and I have no idea how that expression is still really, except how it shows up in every moment. And I just wanted to say that you and Donna are so alive in it, and everything I have ever experienced with either of you and both of you is radiant, and I'm so happy to connect.
Wow, thank you so much. That it's so moving to hear you and hear your words, and just to for me just to hold you in my heart again in this moment. How very, very sweet. And thank you for your beautiful words, and just welcome to all the rest of us. We just embrace you and hold you, and thank you. What a treat.
Thanks all. Thank you.
Bye bye. And is there one more person who'd like to say something?
This is JS in good old Skokie, Illinois.
I'm glad Skokie is still good old. That's marvelous.
It's
hi, JS.
Still here and it's still great.
Oh, wonderful.
The word that keeps resonating from that wonderfully long title of this talk is the word enjoy. And it's I mean, when you start grasping it, and when you really start to bathe in the magnificence, it's such a hoot. and I think that's, for me anyway, all of the rest of this stuff takes care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
When I understand the joy of all that the word magnificence has to hold, and enjoying it and experiencing that joy on all of those different levels that you talked about, everything else about all the other words about being the leaders and being the inspirations and the servants and so on takes care of itself.
Wow. Wow. Beautiful. I should have
told
you.
I just
you
wanted.
Yeah, go ahead.
that's just what I wanted to share, because that's what I'm experiencing right now. And
wow.
Thank you. And thank you all so much, everybody else, for being part of it.
Oh, beautiful, JS. Thank you so much. What a beautiful, beautiful insight and sharing, and I just so appreciate you. And thank you for acknowledging everybody else. I've said a few other times that of everything I do, I just hold this monthly gathering in such a special place in my heart. It's just to use a metaphor, it's like better than going to church. and I don't mean that as anything negative about church, but it's just a beautiful experience of life to come together in the middle of soul, to just together, whatever the topic happens to be, whatever the topic is, in a sense, it's a way that we just acknowledge the mental version of the bigger truth that draws us all together. And as a couple of you basically just said, that it draws us to a place that's bigger than what the mind can even contain. And so while we do language and we do concepts, in truth we're doing something much bigger than that. And so just in this last hour, I want to just celebrate you and invite you to celebrate yourself and us, not just as magnificent beings, but as living, glowing celebrations of life, life itself, whether we call that life, divinity, or God, whether we call that infinity or multidimensionality, whether we call that vastness or expansiveness, whether we call that humanness or earthiness, whether we call that anything. It doesn't really matter what we call it. It's just, it glows. Life is alive. Life is life is a tangible, feelable, magnificent expression of itself. And we happen to be not just one of those embodiments and expressions. We happen because of how we got put together and how we're called to know it in the fullest possible sense. We're called to celebrate it, going back to that word enjoy that J.S. plugged so beautifully. We're called to experience it, to express it, to radiate it, to be in the full dynamic richness of what it is. And so thank you for just another beautiful, beautiful time together. And I look really forward to what I think is only 3 weeks from tonight, our next time together. And with that, I would like to invite Donna to say hello to us. And I guess implied in that also is goodbye to us. And Donna, it is yours while I once again push a few little buttons.
Okay. Well, I do, on behalf of everyone I know, want to say thank you, Bill, for a wonderful hour and a beautiful reminder to us and that we can live it in these next 3 weeks. And to everyone out there, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Bill asked me just to mention a few things because he's got a lot of events around the country coming up. And so I wanted to just mention that on July 10th, 11th, and 12th, he'll be in St. George, Utah, and there will be a beautiful weekend for the Immersion in Mysticism. And then Bill will be out in Marin County in California for a seminar July 17th and 18th. And then he's going to tread some new territory, and he's heading up to Toronto, Canada, for August 14th and 15th for a seminar for the very first time there. And then back to St. George in August, the following weekend, where we're going to have a wonderful four-day, first of two weekends, Ultimate Human. So there are a lot of wonderful events, and if you feel inspired to join us, please do. And so with that, I'd love to say goodnight to everyone and blessings to each and every one of you. Are you there, Billy?
I'm here. I was pushing buttons, and when I push buttons, I can't hear you. But so maybe we are now unmuted, Donna.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, Donna, thank you so much, and thank you, everybody. And since we're all unmuted, we can, like, be obnoxious and just say anything we want to say, and we can all say it at the same time, like thank you, have a wonderful 4th of July.
Woo-hoo!
Yay!
Wow, wow, wow. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, marvelous. Toot, toot.
Love you.
I love you. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, Rick? Rick, are you still there?